This is a production of Cornell University.
So it is 4:31, and I'm calling this session of the University Assembly to order. First on our agenda would be the call for late additions, but before that I'd like to recognize and welcome Professor Ed Baptist to the Assembly. I'd like to introduce yourself, Professor Baptist.
What to say? I'm a history professor. I teach U.S. history primarily, and I've been at Cornell West 12 years now. I'm also the House Dean at Carl Becker.
Fantastic. Welcome.
Yeah.
Happy to have you. And okay, so on that, are there any late additions for the agenda? Hearing none, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes from November 3rd. Is there any discussion, comments, or motions on the floor regarding the minutes? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Is there any dissent? Hearing none, the minutes of November 3rd are approved by unanimous consent. Next up is reports from the assemblies. First up is the student assembly, noting that Ms. Batista is not present. Are there any members of the student assembly who have anything to report?
We passed the grocery store resolution. That was one of the main things we've been working on. We also are wrapping up our bio-in funding cycle.
Fantastic. Any questions for the student assembly representatives?
Yeah, that column in the Sun I saw in response to the grocery traction comments from that.
Wait, the one against the student assembly?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wouldn't say it was, I think it's against, but it's also like, what is the dialogue that's happened since that's been published?
Within, like, on student assembly? When we haven't, like, discussed it again after, like, we passed it. I mean, like, that the sponsors of that resolution are the ones that they responded, I think, yesterday.
Okay.
In a letter to the editor, Matthew Spago and Emma Johnson. That was kind of the response from them, at least.
Oh, cool.
Thank you. Any further questions? Hearing none, graduate professional student assembly, Mr. Walrath.
So, this past weekend, the leaders of the GCSA went to the Ivy Plus Summit, which is a meeting of the graduate professional school leaders of the 8 Ivy Plus MIT, which was a very interesting experience. I think that Cornell does a much better job than most of engaging with its community members. And the aside from that, we are in the process of sending out a survey, or we did just send out a survey, trying to get feedback from the graduate professional student body regarding our activity and some other initiatives. And we are, and also at the Ivy Plus Summit was the president of GSEC, Graduate Student Executive Council at the Weill campus. And we are now looking at ways to increase cross-campus communication and collaboration. We're looking to plan an event in New York City, which will be a 3-minute thesis competition, where grad students have 3 minutes to present their entire thesis. And that will be, we'll have some Weill versus Ithaca events like that. So more to look forward to that in the spring.
Thank you, Mr. Rorwitz. Any questions for the GPSA president? Hearing none, employee assembly, Mr. Cisoka. Sorry to catch you when you're drinking.
No worries. So we just had our first president of the staff, President Garrett, on Friday. Call out term was pretty much full except for a row, and then we had over 585 different unique viewers on live stream. So a huge engagement event for us, pretty well received. I think, you know, the lingering question in everyone's mind was what's going on with the burden of bureaucracy memo, and does that mean layoffs? I think the staff members really enjoyed the event, and then it started a really good dialogue with us with our staff constituency. So that was good. We're looking to do follow-ups with that. Other things that are kind of happening on our plate now, looking at TCAP is part of a federal funding kind of bill that's happening. There's kind of some amendments that are going on there. So I'd love if there were other constituent assemblies that were looking at partnering with us on a letter writing campaign. We're partnering with University Relations, trying to figure out the best way to do that as well, too. But again, if there are other folks that are interested in doing that with us, I have a template written out for just kind of running through some things about how to best submit it to our positions. So that's something I think all these groups, you know, use TCAP. So want to help with funding TCAP.
Thank you, Mr. Cisoka. Also, if you'd like to sponsor or have some members of your constituency sponsor a resolution, that's something the UA would be welcome to hear, and
cool.
I imagine would enjoy a warm reception here. Any questions, Mr. Cisoka? Hearing none, Faculty Senate, it would be Dean Burns, but I believe he's ill. Do any faculty members have anything to report?
Well, I wasn't at the Senate meeting, but I read the minutes. And there's two discussions. There are discussions of two issues. And one was of reader.
I have to tell
the right. The one was of the change in policy or the development of policy 204A. That's right.
What is the policy number? 6.4.
That's right. Okay, sorry. But anyway, there's a really very lively discussion there. A presentation, as we had, by Phil Sharman and Grumbach. And but then a very lively faculty interchange discussion. And the second was, it was an interesting kind of combination because it was about sexual relations between undergraduate and graduate students and faculty and employees, and in other words, across constituencies. And I say it's an interesting pairing because many people in the question and answer series afterwards brought up the question, the issue of the relationship between these two areas of inquiry that were going on. And the second one, which I'm bringing to the attention of the Assembly because I was interested in seeing how just the faculty side of things was playing out, but I think since there are multiple constituencies here, it's useful for the for all of the folks here, representatives of different constituencies, to look at the faculty perspective on because there was a lot of strong discussion. There were several points of that policy that were raised for votes of up and down. And I won't go through them, there were like 5 or 6 points. And I think 4 out of 6 were voted down by the faculty for various grounds, on various grounds. And that's useful for you to look at as well, to think about that dimension.
Thank you, Mr. Hatch. Any questions?
And I want to say one more thing.
Of course.
That we're making some progress on a faculty, but it's also other constituencies in the university, students and employees, on a, as maybe you saw in the paper, There is a leadership group about sustainability that has been formed by the president, particularly designed to discuss how Cornell presents itself as not only a sustainable campus, but what initiatives are being taken here, what research is going on here that's important to look at climate change, to counter the climate change amelioration of climate change. So this was called for by the president as a consequence of the trustee meeting. I'm calling it once again to the attention of everybody. If you haven't already seen it, it may have been in the Sun, but it was 7 minutes from the Chronicle, the senior leadership, which is having its first meeting in the next week or two. And I think it would be useful to report to the assembly to the university assembly periodically, because we have representatives on that group who are also assembly members.
Thank you, Mr. Hatch. On the policy 6.4, members will recall, it was 2 meetings ago we had Carol Grumbach and John Stokon, as well as Alan Mittman, present to us. At the time, they did not actually give us a copy of their slides. However, those slides actually are available as addendums to the Faculty Senate minutes, so if anyone's interested in those slides, they're available once you sign up with their net ID. Any questions for Mr. Hatch? Mr. Bryce.
I was at the Faculty Senate meeting, and I found it interesting that there was so much disagreement on the resolution, the second resolution regarding sexual relations with undergrads and graduates among faculty.
Yeah, and so I'm going to get it up on my computer, or else I talk a little more clearly about it. So what was that one?
So, well, they voted on five. And it was like policy, undergrad, policy, graduate students, establishments. You were there too. But a lot of the votes, like, were very slow. And it was by secret ballot. So I was wondering if there's a more holistic, like, poll that could be done to see what the entire faculty of Cornell University thinks about these policies, because that body's not exactly sure it's completely representative, especially because of the secret ballot process.
Now you're seeing Cornell, not just the faculty, but Cornell University.
Well, I would rather, I mean, the faculty makes that policy, so I would find it interesting if there would be, like, a poll done to see what the faculty in general think, because I know there was a lot of discontent, and people said they were talking to the departments they represent, but some people, I don't think, talk to their department, and the department can't see how they voted, the individual senators. So I was wondering if there was any, like, polling.
Well, I'm glad I brought it up then to the University Assembly, because that particular action seems to me to be a good one for the University Assembly to take on, because we represent all the constituents. And I frankly think if we can find some way of developing a poll, that, you know, across the board, either to our respective assemblies, sub-assemblies, or a university-wide poll, it may be useful. I don't know what committee we could turn to maybe campus welfare would be a good committee to take on developing a poll. It should be done fairly soon, so I don't know how welfare is doing in terms of getting itself together, but...
Welfare is, from what my understanding, they've been meeting regularly, yeah. And they are. They have passed. I mean, we have a resolution from them as well. Professor Howard, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I missed the University of Baptist meeting where it came up because I was on the phone. But was it? Were you there?
I read the minutes.
If any senator requests a roll call vote, that happens. It doesn't have to be by secret ballot. Secret ballot happens only if someone objects. So if no one objected, then...
No, I'm not sure all the senators know that.
I was surprised by the vote, personally.
It came down to one vote on one of the things they voted on, and not all faculty senators were there. So, like, I even questioned that really covered the faculty, let alone all faculty.
Mr. Kaufman?
The only vote, so there were, I think there were four votes, and three of them failed to get support from the Faculty Senate. The relationship with undergraduate students failed by 40% were for it, 58% were against it. The obligation to disclose relationships failed. I don't have the vote count by 21 to 32, 21 for, 32 against. And then the remedies that they proposed also failed, 13 to 39. The only thing that passed was passed as in, like, sense of the body, so it's not actually, like, binding, was actually the, you know, what they proposed with the relationship with graduate students, and that passed actually by 27 to 25, so one vote, and it would have failed. One was one vote away from failing. So it seems like the faculty are really split on the graduate student ones in particular.
I just want to note that this is not a institution of a policy, it's a revision of current policy. And in order to interpret these votes, you really do have to look at the current policy. And many of the votes were, at least according to the comments that I saw, who were against certain policies were saying that with the current policy, it's not broken. Let's keep that. This is too restrictive and it's too much interfering with people's lives, individual lives. And yeah, the debate is very useful to read. Before we take any particular stand or go in any particular direction, I suggest that, you know, whoever's going to frame a kind of poll, you know, read through the debate. I don't think it's a matter of the faculty not caring or not understanding it, at the Senate. I think it's really just a matter, and I do agree that it should be campus-wide to look at it, but I think it's a matter of... you know, thinking through the issue in terms of freedom of association, freedom of expression, or however we want in those broader contexts.
Thank you, Mr. Hatch. Mr. Walra.
Two things. First, are the faculty senators public records?
I believe they are. I was able to access them. I went to log my internet ID, so So they may not be public, but at least members of the Cornell community have access to them.
Okay. And yeah, so I guess my sense is that it wasn't so I spoke extensively with the GPSA faculty liaison on this, or faculty senate liaison on this, and my sense was that the resolution itself hasn't failed in the sense that it hasn't voted down, just
right. I didn't say the resolution.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear that this is still very much, you know, alive in some senses. And the GPSA itself is actually considering whether or not we will weigh in as an assembly via our own resolution on the issue, because there are some aspects. So Dean Byrne sought out my own and Juliana's piece of input on this, and there are many parts of the resolution that I personally very much like, and I think many graduate students actually like to see implemented. But I do think that it's a broad enough topic to merit some consideration by this assembly for the constituent assembly.
Thank you, Mr. Walworth. And before we move on, if members would like to, the Assembly has charter does have the ability to call for a referendum or a poll, as Mr. Hash, or Professor Hash put it. The mechanism for that, I'm not sure if it's set up. I know the Student Assembly has worked extensively on it, but it is something that is technically within our governing documents and could be called upon, along with the regular resolution concerning it, should it be brought by a member. Any other comments or questions for Professor Hash? Hearing none, we'll move on to committee updates. Executive Committee, Mr. Thompson.
I'd like to welcome Michelle and Ms. Brady, and they'll be giving us an update on Resolution 12 from the UA 2014-2015 year at approximately 5 o'clock, but feel free in the meantime to get some food or water or anything you'd like. Other than that, we'd like to welcome Professor Baptist to the Assembly. We'll make sure you have a placard by the next meeting.
Thank you. Mr. Rowe, did you have anything you'd like to say, or... I believe this is your...
This is my last UA meeting before I leave the university at the end of the month. So just wanted to thank everybody for their hard work on behalf of their constituents and the opportunity to serve alongside of all of you. It's, I think, probably one of the greatest privileges and honors we have as staff, as students, as faculty, as just members of the Cornell community, is to be a part of the assembly system. So I hope you all continue with the great work that... we've been doing, and sad to go. This is probably the part that I'm going to miss the most, but excited for my new opportunity. So thanks for a few seconds to say that, and I think we should get back to business.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Mezzi. I can just say personally, it's been a pleasure working with you. I think the rest of the assembly echoes that. For those who don't know, Greg has served on at least 3 of the Cornell's 5 assemblies in various capacities, so he will be sorely missed, and we wish him all the best.
Hoping to come back at some point and grab the other 2. Time will only tell.
Moving back to the last part, for the last announcement from the Executive Committee is, as Mr. Mezzi is departing, he is vacating the seat of the Assembly. We've already, last meeting, we elected Mr. Coffin to serve as interim CJSC chair, but he's also vacating a seat on the JA Search Committee. And as they are meeting, kind of contact the President's office, the next meeting is the 1st of December, which is after Mr. Mendes' departure, but before the next meeting of the Assembly, I'd like to ask for consensus to appoint Mr. Coffin to replace Mr. Mezzi on the committee, as he is currently serving as CJC chair, and the exec believes it is important to have the CJC chair have a voice in the search process. If there's any comments or discussion on that.
So I'll chime in. I think it's important to have the CJC chair, but I also do remember back to the conversations we had during the election to make sure that all constituent groups are represented on that search committee, and that would leave the employee constituent group not represented. So I maybe would suggest that the constituent group that Mr. Kaufman represents, you know, decide if he would be a fair replacement for the student constituent group, but I do think it's important that there is an employee perspective on that search committee, because that was the rationale used by many around this table when we appointed that committee, that faculty, students, undergraduates, and employees were all represented. I happen to fill 2 roles, so I think if we miss the mark and we exclude a constituent group, we're doing our broader constituent, broader community a grave disservice.
Mr. Hatch, Professor Hatch Parker.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think that's a good idea. I do want to call attention, though, there are 2 employees on the committee. It's just they're in different capacities than as chair of the CJC. So
sure.
I don't think we have to replace Gabe on our undergraduate. I think it's better to have somebody representing the CJC on the committee than it is to just find another representative. If there's somebody on the CJC, a graduate student who may want to join, or excuse me, an employee who may want to join, then that's an option.
Is this a statement that the current employee on the CJC is Chief Cornell Police Chief Zoner? She actually, we're actually going to hopefully have her present the next meeting. She's out of town, so she actually would not be able to attend the next Joint Search Committee meeting, which is on December 1st. By Mr. Sisoko, do you have a comment?
So that was maybe one of my questions, is who is the other employee? And then I think if it's Chief Zoner, I mean, I think that's a different perspective than like an assembly, an EA person,
yeah,
or just another staff person. So I would echo Greg's comments, and I think that's something that just to consider making sure that, yes, it's a staff person, but I think it's what is the perspective of that staff person. All the staff people here wear a lot of hats, like everyone else, and just how do we make sure that the staff community at large is represented on the committee?
Point of information.
So, Mr. Coffin?
Who actually is on the JA search committee?
Right now, it is Vice President Lombardi. I believe it is, we want to look right, I don't have a note for the other one is. Our three core members are Juliana Batista, Emily Tangerico, Mr. Mezzi, and then Ms. Professor Ash. VP Lombardi is serving on it, and I believe...
Wendy Harlow from Council's office?
Wendy Sackler is from Council's office, I believe.
Sackler?
Yes.
And the...
JPC is Emily Tangerico, yes.
Okay, and then there's also a representative from Human Resources.
So
Human Resources.
Okay, so we have a representative from Human Resources then?
Who's facilitating the human resource aspect of the search.
Yes, that's correct. As far as I'm aware.
So one of the things too that I struggle with is that as employees we often are, well, there's other employees on that because they work here, but it's what role are they serving, right? There may be some students on there that have no interest in reporting back to the, you know, student constituent group as a whole. So just because there are employees on there by position, I don't think is a fair substitute for an employee who's invested in the shared governance system and representation of the entire employee community.
Thank you, Mr. Mezzi. Also, in terms of practicality, Mr. Mezzi is, in essence, a one-quarter of the WA delegation. To remove Ms. Batista, A, she's not in the room, which is unfortunate in that regard, but to pretty much switch up half the committee, I believe, may provide a disruption to the search, and I'm not sure the administration would see that. That is certainly on the table.
The search really hasn't started outside of the initial sort of brain searching meeting, so as a member of that committee, I'm not sure how disruptive it actually would be. Former member of that committee.
Mr. Walrath.
I said that you are an interim chair.
Right, yeah, I'm the interim chair. So
we have, so that's my other issue, not issue, for example. I guess, yeah, sure. My other issue with having Mr. Coffin serve on the chair is that since he has only an interim appointment, his position, if we make it that it is the CJC chair on that search committee, it would be, in essence, another interim appointment to that committee. And we would have to reinvestigate again once the CJC chair is found. So I think it might be more beneficial to find our permanent replacement. And if, even though, yes, there was a consensus that we want CJC represented, I don't think there was a consensus that the CJC chair need be the one representing. It just worked out that the chair of the CJC was an employee, and therefore we could satisfy or, you know, have representation from all constituents that way. But an employee representative on the CJC, and we have not just Kathy Zoner, I believe, but others.
The other CJC seat, insofar as I've been told, is currently vacant for that held by the EA. So Kathy Zoner is the only member of the Employee Assembly on the CJC currently.
Appointed by the EA.
He's correct. Yeah. Mr. Crawford.
I think so the EA hasn't filled their second CJC slot. So I could look into after we've appointed our second CJC member, maybe having that person be on the search committee, but
you know, we haven't done that yet. So that's a possible option, but I think it's really important that we have people who are on the CJC on the committee, and if you think that that's like...
Juliana's on the CJC.
No.
No?
So, you know.
Professor Ash?
I don't believe we can solve this around this table.
I think this is exactly what we should solve.
We leave things as they are until some more information comes, like, for example, another appointment from the employee standpoint, and we can make some considerations. We'll have to do catch up anyway, no matter what it is, if goes off. But I think it is important to have somebody from the CJC on the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Ash. And just as for the members, the next meeting of the JA Search Committee is Tuesday, December 1st. It is before our meeting. So if we do not have a consensus, or if we do not empower the UA exec to act to fill the seat in the interim, the UA will not have a fourth representative. Mr. Kaufman?
Would you guys feel comfortable if I went to the next meeting and then we reconsidered the issue at our next UA meeting? With that, just so we have someone going?
So we have our EA meeting tomorrow.
Okay.
We had some interest already voiced from some EA members on the CJC position. So perhaps what we can do is just formalize that and get a confirmed EA CJC member, and at that point then have them participate in both. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Cochner.
I'm pretty sure that the EA spot that's missing is the UA appointee spot, because the employee...
No. By the EA. Kathy is by the EA.
Right.
And the seat that's so open
the UA
is...
The EA.
Because the UA has the chair
and
two other seats.
Correct. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
Mr.
Warren.
In that case, I'd like to make a motion that the UA Executive Committee be empowered to make an appointment once more information to the new employee member or new employee family member is appointed to CJC or other such things, to put the add a caveat that someone be appointed by December 1st, even if it is an interim appointment of the chief company.
That is a form of motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion or dissent? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve that, or motion to accept that recommendation?
Motion to accept that recommendation.
Okay. Being this is a formal action, I'd like a placard. All those in favor, please raise your placards. All those opposed? All those who would like to abstain? By a vote of 9-1-0, the UA exec will discuss this issue further, with the goal of considering the final CJC member from the employee assembly, and then ensuring that we do have representation come December 1st, regardless of who that may be, insofar as the UA exec is able to ensure that we are adequately represented. Moving on, Campus Infrastructure Committee, Professor Lowe is not present. Is there anyone who would like to report from that committee? Hearing none, Campus Welfare Committee. I know Richard Smith is unfortunately unable to be here. Are there any members of CWC who have anything to report? Hearing no report. Code and Usual Committee, Mr. Kaufman.
Yeah, so we actually have our first meeting tomorrow, and I just want to give you an update on some things we're going to be discussing. We're going to be discussing the Community Bill of Rights Working Group. I sent out a draft of the actual Bill of Rights that some of the members of the CJC from last year started to work on for the members to review. We're going to be discussing the composition of the working group in addition to the draft that they kind of had already started. We're going to talk about Policy 6.4, some of the changes that the different assembly constituencies have seen, probably the composition of the panels that were recommended. And then, another thing we're going to talk about is, those are the two big things, and another smaller thing, the peer review boards, which that technically is under the Division of Campus Life, which is under the Student Assembly, but as it applies to conduct on campus, we just want to take a look and see, what actually, what jurisdiction do those have, what's the interaction with that in the campus code, And then, you know, finally, we're just gonna talk about like when is a good meeting time for the rest of the year. So, you know, that hasn't happened yet. That's tomorrow. So,
what time?
5:30 to 6:30. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
Yeah. Thank you. So you've got like 6 hours.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could be good.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Kaufman? Just reminding members to please try and direct questions to the chair so we retain some order. Hearing none, Mr. Thompson, I believe had a last minute update from CWC.
The CWC has been keeping track of what's been going on with the SA Resolution 16, which is addressing labor issues at the Will Cornell Medical Campus and Center. President Garrett did respond to that resolution about a week ago, and the response was essentially everything's fine. So one thing that the Campus Welfare Committee is looking into is potentially putting forward a resolution from the UA that would request more specific information about employment practices at the Cutter Medical School campus.
Thank you. Mr. Waller.
So I spoke with the, as I said, I had a conference call with the president of GSEC and MSEC over a while, and they had actually had a conference call with the Cutter student government representative. And the Cutter student government representatives had no idea what anyone over here was talking about with regard to labor practices. So I don't know if that's because the students there are shielded from labor practices, that might be the case, but at the same time, like, but this could, at the very least, serve as a useful point of contact. So if we can also get in touch with the Cutter student government representative. So I'll try and make that contact and I can communicate or connect with CWC with this person.
So Mr. Rock. Mr.
McBride. I just had a question. So the graduate professional students have like controls just the FK campus, and then there's another one for Wild Medical and then another one for Cadar.
I actually just gave a presentation this today. So of all those Ithaca campuses, of all Cornell campuses, Ithaca, Geneva, Cornell Tech, represented by the GPSA and directly controlled by the Board of Trustees. Weill is controlled by the Board of Overseers, so the Board of Trustees has limited authority over Weill. Thus, Weill has its own, actually they have two student government groups, MSEC and GSEC, Medical Students Executive Committee, Graduate Student Executive Committee. And then Cutter, I don't know if they're controlled by the Board of Trustees or the Overseers, but they also are represented by a different student government group. So the GPSA and our charter and bylaws specifically cover Ithaca, Geneva, and Cornell Tech.
Thank you. Further questions for Mr. Thompson? Hearing none, I had actually asked that we go out of order on our agenda past 5 o'clock and move directly to Ms. Schill and Ms. Brady's presentation to not waste their time. Is there any sense on that? Hearing none, we'll move right into their presentation. Welcome to the assembly.
Thank you. Can you wait?
Of course.
Anything? Yeah. Yeah, I could bring the notes, but I printed it. October, but know, all of our schedules got away from us, which is fine because we were able to gather a little more information since and actually put some more staffing towards it as well. So I know that this was meant to be a bicycle and pedestrian update, or that's what you were intending, but in transportation planning, especially in the initial phases, you have to look at the entire thing as a system. And so bike and ped planning is part of what we're evaluating. But so this is about the 30,000 foot view transportation planning assessment of current existing conditions. And Mr. Brady, Michelle, and we will. Okay, so the agenda today, we want to talk a little bit about the timeline because although we hadn't set expectations in the resolution, we want to let you know where we're at. Again, there isn't a lot of, the beginning of a transportation plan is very sexy. You're digging up the information from where we've been. We need to know what we don't know before we start planning for the future. And so looking at a lot of the existing conditions, looking at a lot of plans, Leslie and I are both relatively new to Cornell. And so we have a lot of research to do before we understand what it is that actually needs to be planned for. So that's we're digging through stacks of plans like this. We've come up with some, 1996, which are pretty interesting. 75, yes. Mm-hmm. We're planning on 75. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that we know where what was planned, and there's any redundancies because some things have actually changed, and there are a lot of great things on this campus. Then transportation improvement projects. We do have some discrete projects that have been going, so we are making changes as things go and making improvements. Leslie will speak to those. And then I want to talk a little bit about the bike share program because the Bike and Pedestrian Committee has been working on resource sharing. Bike culture needs bikes, and so they have been working on the bike share program aside from looking at some of the planning components as well. So the timeline, the resolution, as you know, came about just about the time that we had a new president. So President Scorton was well aware of all of the issues that we had with bike and pedestrian planning and was all very on board. However, we have a transition in leadership and we needed to make sure that President Garrett was aware of the situation. Again, we're looking at the 30,000 foot view, helping her understand where it is that we are in our transportation system, the health of the transportation system, what we have in existence now. And so we're really helping her transition her into the concepts of transportation planning. We have had one conversation with her at least about this, about these priorities and her priorities. And she is there. She does have a strong sense of the need for bike and pedestrian and transportation improvements. Another timeline issue that we were dealing with, it's been a year's search. I'm happy to say that we have Reed Hugrich that will be here Monday, a transportation planner, a senior transportation planner. It took a year to find the right person. We're really excited. He comes from the North Carolina, APEX North Carolina, which is in the Chapel Hill area. And so he's familiar with solid transportation systems. Mm-hmm. I've been to the Chapel Hill campus. They really have a lot of great things going on. And so he's familiar with that. And he's also familiar with regional and urban planning as well. So we're very excited to bring Reed on board, and he has quite a bit to do. We already have a list of things for him. He's going to be reading, helping us read through that stack and stack. So we're excited for Reed to come on board. Again, not very exciting, but we need to know what infrastructure we have right now. How many miles of sidewalks and trails do we have, paved or unpaved? What are our sidewalk conditions look like? And we have been doing assessments on sidewalk conditions, whether it be ADA compliance or otherwise, safety issues. Let's see, how many bike lanes do we have? And then we talk about gaps in the trails. And behavioral
We haven't done a commuter survey to understand mode split since 2008, and so we don't really know how people are using the current infrastructure, how they're getting to work. Is there interest in more of a bike culture? We know that there is, but we also need some anecdotal information as well. So we need to do a commuter survey. And then the bike and pedestrian counts, we need to know how it's being used right now by the bike and pedestrian community. And so we don't have current counts either. So we'll be working on that. Identify problem areas of concern, safety areas, and we call these hot spots. You usually look at some reports of conflict or incidents, near misses, and unfortunately there are some grave situations that we've encountered in the past couple of years as well. Gaps in trails, so where the sidewalk ends and there isn't another bicycle facility. We there are quite a few of those where all of a sudden the sidewalk's done, there isn't anywhere else to go. So those types of things. And we do have a trail system, but there are areas in which we haven't connected them yet. And it's really because those are the really difficult areas to address. and those would be most difficult to address with safety concerns as well, and they're the most expensive as well. And again, the sidewalk and crosswalk inventory. We do this on an annual basis, crosswalk every summer, and then the sidewalk, we just finished that in November 14, 2015. Existing conditions and plans, we are reviewing previous Cornell plans, and Leslie will speak to these a little bit, but the transportation generic environmental impact statement, some of you may have been here when this is very, very, I think it's two, three-year project. It actually helped us understand how people get to campus, but it did not address circulation around campus. And so we are reviewing that. I've been reading the T-Guides, is what it's referred to. I'll let Leslie speak to the master plan because that's her baby.
Yeah. So just as a handoff here, looking at the T-Guide, you know, that was really devised to work with our larger Tompkins County community and evaluate the impacts of projected growth and development of campus, as well as population, specifically knowing that Cornell is the largest employer in like an 8-county shed. In commuting at that time in 2008, represented about a third of all workers coming into this county. So certainly when development is projected, generally transportation impacts are one of the most important pieces brought to every community meeting. So this particular study was done to look at how we can mitigate those transportation impacts of projected future growth at that time. Some of that growth has come to pass, some has not. So really looking at where we've come, how much has campus grown, how much has our student population grown, are those happening in areas we imagined they would, including along the periphery of campus? So in areas like College Town or East Hill Village. And so that gets into the campus master plan that kind of identified new nodes for housing as well as for development of particular parcels on campus for academic use. The campus master plan spoke strongly about a compact, walkable, bikeable campus and thinking about the long term, so a 50, 60-year vision. But some of the primary points that it brought up that we'll be, you know, testing this against because we're getting ready to start the State of the Campus Master Plan report, so evaluating sort of its successes, gaps, and identified changes since 2008. It looked at transportation circulation, and some of the top 3 points were to really encourage cycling, and that was to really build the infrastructure to make it possible, but also to program for safety and for education, to look at how we can really build a comprehensive, interconnected system of sidewalks and pathways, so this is really the pedestrian network. And then to look at those elements within the network that make it possible and comfortable to walk, so really looking at physical safety and lighting. So I'll talk a little bit about that in a couple minutes. And I should mention that our campus sustainability plan strongly calls for bike and pedestrian access. So we know that many of these plans on campus, regardless of vintage, you know, have called for this for a long time. We want to gather, collate, and put those against the next slide, which is to put that against all the other community initiatives. So looking at the town of Ithaca's bike plan, the city of Ithaca's bike plan, their advisory committee, the new advocacy groups that are coming online like Bike Walk Tompkins and what they're doing to really improve safe routes to school. Some of these communities really connected to the edge of campus, and we recognize that a real bike ped plan in the future would be fully interconnected. So looking at their whole host, I have like 15 of those. But right here what you're looking at is the ITCTC 2013 update map of the bicycle suitability study. So it looks at the entire county and ranks roads based on what kind of bicycle amenities are actually out there, bike infrastructure, signage, width, volumes of traffic. And so looking at how we can potentially utilize the same criteria. You know, they even look at parts of campus. They're primarily focused on Tower Road and some access to North Campus, but we haven't really fleshed that out ourselves. So in moving forward, a couple of the first things we're going to do, if we go to the next slide, again, our baseline assessment. So looking at our annual sidewalk assessment, and we now have a sense of it's in online GIS, so it's something we can go out and inventory on the ground, take pictures, evaluate year over year. For example, last year's hard winter took an extreme toll on North Campus. So sidewalks that might have been in a mediocre position really turned out to be in very poor position come this spring. So we're now building those into the capital plan. Doing that in conjunction with developing new standards. So for example, we just developed a new mid-block crosswalk standard for campus. And you know, if you look at most of our roads, we have many, many mid-block crossings. Those can be some of the most dangerous. Cars aren't necessarily expecting pedestrians to walk out. Pedestrians aren't necessarily following the rules and, you know, paying attention. So those two things together with, depending on where the lighting is, if it's a nighttime situation or how many modes are traveling at once, we definitely recognize this as a place for improvement. So here's a picture of Clarman when it was completely blocked off and a crosswalk happening and the bricks that we're moving away from because of frost heave, they don't stay well. So really looking at some of our standards. And then lastly, considering accessibility and the nature of topography of campus as well as historic structures makes that challenging from the start. But where we can really integrate that into our larger comprehensive pedestrian access, we need to be thinking about universal access. Yes?
Can I ask a question on your standards?
Sure.
It seems to me that one of the difficulties on campus are these places where we have three-way or four-way stops,
mm-hmm.
where you get a lot of driver rage because it takes so long to get through. And
right.
Once they get through, they go tearing down the road, which is when you get into troubles in those mid-block crossings. Are you considering some alternative to having these four-way stops, such as the traffic light, for instance?
Roundabouts. Well, you know, roundabouts are interesting where you have the land. And in many places, we're incredibly constrained physically to have the space, say, at an Easton campus. And we're looking at how we can improve that just for turning radii for buses so they're not coming head-on into the oncoming traffic. So those are things we're trying to address. Roundabouts may work on the edge of campus, also. The road rage is definitely an issue. One thing that's great about this, if I could flip it, is that it considerably slows traffic when folks know that if they're showing up in a car and it's class change, that they're the last man and they have to wait their turn. You have to wait your turn six times to make it through the intersection. And so what we're hoping it does is actually deters folks from driving through the densest center of campus. In the long term, we would like to find alternatives to having single occupancy vehicles, especially in the center of campus. But in the meantime, you know, and that means having a great bus system, great bike routes, giving people real alternatives, good walking conditions. So that's what we're looking to do. But it's certainly an issue. To my knowledge, Bridget, correct me if I'm wrong, we're not looking to signalize extra intersections around campus. We have three, and that seems about where we are right now. Yes?
Are you looking to put any additional stop signs out for traffic control? There are some longish stretches where I see cars routinely violating 30 miles.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yeah. So for those, the new mid-block crosswalk standard might address that better, which would be to it begins with notification arrows in advance of a crosswalk. The crosswalk itself is a raised table. We would like there to be a lighting and a signage element that is all incorporated into design of those, and they're happening at the major points of destination and origin so that we get the largest flows of foot traffic across. So to notify, you know, and then reflective paint and things that can let the driver know that they should be expecting pedestrians, because sometimes it's a surprise when somebody steps out.
Yeah.
At the intersection, it's not a surprise, it's just frustration. I recognize that, yeah. So to that, we've also started looking at, you know, what's the campus lighting situation. And this is a brand new inventory, actually, that we're loading here. You can't really tell. You can see the tiny blue dots here. Okay, you can see tiny little yellow things and little black ants crawling across there. Essentially, blue or blue lights. The yellow are site lighting, so that's anything that could be a building mount light to lighting on handrails on stairs or lighting in the landscape. And the very dark, tiny dots are all the pole mount lights on campus. And we're looking at evaluating our pedestrian system from a nighttime perspective, from safety, and how we can make sure that those areas that we want to condone and encourage people to travel, and where they already do need to travel to and from, that are well lit. And so this, all of these pieces come together as we're looking at a, you know, a fully developed pedestrian and bicycle plan of the future, when we would be looking at what are the elements that need to come together in order to make sure that happens. So again, we're still in the inventory stage. So you see the all these different areas here in different patterns. So these are surveys that have been completed in the last 5 years that folks from facilities maintenance, facilities engineering, and CUPD complete with students in both the residential and Central Forest campus to do walkthroughs, usually right about late fall, just before daylight savings. Kicks on or off, I can't remember the answer, but they start walking through areas where people either perceive darkness or are known dark areas, or there have been issues or incidents. And so we're looking at the last 5 years worth of data, where people noted problems year over year, where are those areas where we already have them addressed or they're in the planning, and so, you know, and where are those areas where it's actually not Cornell land and we need to partner with local municipalities or NYSEG or other agencies that are leads for lighting. So this is yet another piece just to let you know that we're trying to pull all the strings together to begin development. So, but what have we done, right? We like to pat ourselves on the back now and again when we can. Tower Road now boasts 1,050 linear feet of a complete street, mm-hmm. and so that means that the buses have ample lanes and bus pull-offs and new shelters. Pedestrians have a very generous sidewalk system and new lighting, and as well as new street trees. And we have a great bioswale that was planted here with classes of horticulture and landscape architecture students to deal with stormwater runoff on site. So it's a green infrastructure with five planting schemes, and now they're actually doing analysis post implementation to see which of those is doing better, which are treating water better. So it has a great you know, living laboratory kind of feel to it as well. And we'll be analyzing that in the future as we look at some of our other streetscapes when we're developing those. The nice thing about Tower Road is it's wide enough to accommodate all of these amenities. So to the point earlier of, are there other mitigation strategies? Tower offered a great opportunity to do a streetscape and make sure all the modes of transportation, all of their needs were met. So bicycles have a very nice wide bike lane, and, you know, PEZ as well as transit. And there's even parking, but this was all removing headed parking on gravel that was parked on top of, you know, the roots of trees that failed, and the danger that created with backing out into the street. So all of those have been remediated, and I think it's well received. The only thing we don't have out there right now is interpretive signage to tell people the great story about it, but we hope to. Part two that we just completed this year was to really address the intersection. So to the point of signalized intersections, widened radii for bus turning movements, so both TCAT as well as, you know, Bailey Hall gets a lot of commercial bus traffic and summertime traffic and buses that are lost on campus, but making sure there's an actual pull-off over there. We did lose a few trees there, so we were sad about this, but you've seen there are new oaks planted, and so that's lovely. And thinking about, they also completed the bike lanes and making sure that they continue down. We still have a small stretch of towers to be addressed in the future, but looking at how we can use this as really a model for both the intersection and the road itself. Next, I wanted to share with you something that's in planning. So right here is Route 366 and this is Pine Tree Road, and so I've sliced two pieces from Google. I'm coming down to Maple Avenue on Pine Tree, and coming this summer, there may be some road disruption, so please, I preface the good news with the bad, but there will be a new Pine Tree Road bridge and trail project that will connect the East Hill Rec Way across the road on a new bridge superstructure, and it's a collaboration between the county and town of Ithaca. This is like 8 years in the making, and $1.8 million. Mm-hmm. A lot of it leveraged state and federal funding, but still, the local partners had to come up with not insignificant amounts of money, and I can't even tell you the staff hours. But it'll be pretty great, and in light of the fact that, you know, Maplewood graduate housing will be coming online, and East Hill Village of the Future is being discussed very seriously, this is going to be a great link between the East Hill Recway and campus and future links out. And so this is something that we've been partnering, this came out of the T-Guys actually, that came into the TIM, so I'll list as many acronyms as I can pile on top, but those were transportation, improvement, mitigation strategies. This was one of the projects that was brought up 8 years ago that could benefit both community and Cornell. Yes.
They're pulling the railroad bridge down.
Yes, the railroad bridge, the old one that's quite low, will be pulled off. A new bridge superstructure will be put on. In between then, the county will widen the road because there's essentially no, they will raise it, so there will be a better clearance. They'll also widen the road. There's no shoulder on either side right now. It requires some retaining wall structures, but also there will be a nice trail that starts, you see the our trail network, so this is on the other side, 366 and Cornell, and it will come along here in the print shop, and it will come up through the pine trees, and then it will cross the bridge over to the existing East Hill Railway. And then, oh, I'm sorry, and then the other leg continues up to Maple Avenue, which is where the edge of the thin part of the East Hill Railway pedestrian path also travels. Yeah.
I have a general question, but you guys go ahead.
All right. Oh, one to go. Okay, one more. So, and we're also thinking about things possibly for the future. This is neither a funded project or anything else, but just to let you know that internally we have to juice this flowing for thinking about what could we, should we be doing to improve the pedestrian realm on campus and adjacent to campus. So in College Town, thinking about the fact that it's about to get really tall and there are no public open or green spaces there, what could we do to create a safe and welcoming pedestrian linear park or something that's green and allows you a little more access to and even highlights the new link to the Cascade Gorge Trail. This is on the back side, if you will. It's really the delivery side and the, you know, FAA road for fire access of the Schwartz Center up at the top here, coming down and wrapping around Cascade Hall. And so if you could really tie together some historic elements from Sheldon Court, Cascade Hall, Eddie Gate. This area is heavily used by pedestrians now, but it doesn't have a nice treatment and doesn't feel like it's for pedestrians. So if it had a different finish level, what would that look and feel like? So we thought about adding trees and, you know, could there be art? We're very much in the early conceptualized timeline looking at could there be a small recreational element? Should be more green infrastructure and dealing with stormwater runoff from the buildings, or would it be better if it served more like a plaza for public programming? Anyway, this is something we're doing in-house, but I just wanted to share that we're thinking about the public realm and how it connects to between communities and Cornell, as well as looking at on Cornell campus. Hmm.
I think that's it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, this is more a general question for the two of you, so why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Sure. Well, now this was an update for the Bike and Pedestrian Committee, and they have been working on programs other than the planning component because you still need bikes to have a bike culture, and so resource sharing is the foundation for a sustainable transportation system. You know, we share cars, we share transit, etc. So the Big Red Bike Program. Its current status is it's been suspended so that we could reevaluate it. It was
student volunteer managed and funded by student funding, and neither is a sustainable business model. It's just so much turnover with students, and then the funding priorities change as well. And so just to let you know how important this is, we did some student orientation programs this past spring and this past fall. 1 out of 5 students, prospective students, asked if we had bike share. And so nationwide is actually very, very important. Again, not every student wants to own a bike. They need it for 30 minutes just to get to class. And so this is, West Coast, this is wildly popular. So we reevaluated the funding model. Transportation will help subsidize it. We reallocated some of our transportation demand management resources so that we could help subsidize it further. We have staff that is dedicated to this program. And excuse me, but it's so the Bike and Pedestrian Committee right now is evaluating locations. The provider they've chosen Zagster, which is we already have. It's a very reputable bike share company, and we already have a relationship with them because the management component, the system checkout component for the other bike share program that we had was with Zagster. But this one's going to be an electronic online checkout. You create an account. It's much like a car share situation. And little risk to Cornell. There is an annual fee that we will pay, but otherwise the no capital outlay other than areas in which to put the bike rack. And low risk because they manage the risk if it's outsourced. It will not be completely subsidized. And so right now, the Bike and Pedestrian Committee is evaluating fee schedules. And so unfortunately, public transportation cannot be completely subsidized to be a sustainable funding model. And so that is, we should know more about this program this winter. And that concludes.
Fantastic. We are running a little over time. Do you have time for some quick questions?
Sure.
Fantastic. First on the speaker list is Mr. McBride.
I have 2 questions. The first is, have you considered putting like any speed bumps on West Campus and North Campus? Because there's a lot of students that told me like the cars drive extremely fast and like many people almost get hit, and like I don't want there to be a death. So like I feel like a speed bump is left like a happy medium because it allows drivers, it makes drivers go slower, but it's not too slow, like a stop sign, so people can still get to the places they're going.
Yeah.
And then my other question was, I don't know how much you would know about this, but what is the jurisdiction of the university? Can we like give a ticket to like a Ithaca person coming through, and will that count towards like the state, or is that only like a ticket for from Cornell? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I'll take a speed bump question.
Okay.
So for West Campus specifically, we are we have a couple of mitigation strategies that are in mind or actually being implemented. So for West Campus, when you're on West Avenue specifically, there are probably 5 mid-block crossings, and that's kind of the edge of campus where people feel that they've gotten free of the intersection of campus and east, and or they've gotten through east and now they're coming down to university. Either way, people are kind of flying through. So we recognize that at the end of the Gannett project, when the road is removed from line slope, that what we want to do is collect and kind of be thoughtful about where the paths lead right now. We have some that cross and don't really get somebody somewhere. So we went out and evaluated folks crossing, and they're not even using the crosswalk. They're actually crossing 2 crosswalks in a diagonal fashion to get to the point of destination. So looking at gathering some of them, perhaps removing one of the mid-block crosswalks, and then establishing the mid-block raised table, which essentially brings it up to the level of the sidewalk. So it will serve as, for cars, they will have to come up and come down, and it will have those sort of notification arrows leading up to it. So it would serve that function, as well as the signage and the other kind of package of amenities that would go with the new mid-block crosswalk. So signage potentially with funding of the future, not yet identified, extending a linear line on the
east side of the bottom of the slope before lighting on that side. We have lighting on the west side of West Avenue, but none on the live slope side. You have to be really thoughtful about that because we use live slope for any number of programmatic uses. Some are better or better received programs than others, but we park on live slope, for example, for big alumni events or for move-in day, and so you don't want infrastructure that would be run over. But where we can light the edge of pedestrian crossings, those are found to be the safest. Lighting is one of the amenities you can add that greatly reduces, you know, pedestrians having conflicts with vehicles. So we recognize that for mid-block, especially in pretty high speed zones, what we can do there. Another area we've focused a lot of attention lately is on Gothic Way, where we know people drive every which way, including on the pedestrian section, including sometimes down the stairs, unfortunately. And so how we can let folks know that it's really a limited access road, that it's not a through road, that we have stairs that come down and drop people into something they don't realize is also treated kind of like a street. So we've been tackling these issues of these multi-use areas and how to kind of elevate the pedestrians and increase the safety. And so we're looking at putting some restrictions and a gating system for Gothic Way so that it's only for West Campus residents and, you know, those that the West Campus system deems to need to come in, not including pizza delivery and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, just following up, I'm house professor.
Oh, good.
And I and my kids have several times almost died on Stewart and on University.
Stewart, okay.
Both of them have had experiences where drivers passed stop school buses that were running them off. And just in general.
Really?
Yes. And in one case, they got a ticket. In another case, they escaped. But luckily, my kids escaped.
Two.
The cars, but that's a 30-mile-an-hour zone, but it's also something like 0.4 miles long, and people pick up a lot of speed.
Sure, yeah.
And the places where we have crosswalks don't actually reflect necessarily where people are walking. You've got people coming up from the parking lot, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. So I would love it if you would consider one of those raised table crosswalks. And the same thing on University, where we've got hundreds of people coming from the apartments and yep. other dwellings across to the
cookhouse program and different things. Yep.
And that's also another dangerous topic. We're coming down real fast.
And it's poorly lit, and there aren't any crosswalks on either side. It's definitely an area we're giving a lot of attention to and trying to think about.
Thank you. Next question is Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you had a list of which crosswalks are slated to be updated imminently. I can think of a few that are pretty problematic, most notably right in front of Statler Hall.
20 East
Ave?
Yes. So that's coming soon then. Those on East Ave are coming soon, I can tell you that.
Especially when winter coming, it's dark when people are driving around. There are a few crosswalks I can think of that are very dark and hardly even visible.
We're in the very preliminary stages of planning East Avenue, now just from Tower to campus. So we can't speak to it, you know, to any degree, but we are addressing that in particular, pedestrian and bus safety.
But we'll know big closures in the next couple of years. There are major utility projects, you know, utility vaults that need to be rebuilt and in conjunction with that project, there'll be transportation improvements.
Thank you. Yeah. Next up for you, this is Professor Hash.
Yeah, when I first came here, many years ago before everybody but one person in this room perhaps was born, Cornell ran its own buses. They had their own bus systems. And Central Campus is entirely closed. Tower Road is completely closed. You had to go through a gate. If you didn't have a permit or a particular reason to get through, you wouldn't be able to drive. So big changes. Obviously, campus is great to make. I'm not trying to make a case that we should go back to that, because what you guys are doing is adjusting in ways that will accommodate the flexing of the campus and size and numbers of things. One of the things that was clear then was a lot more people were walking. A lot more people were, now they were closer by, it wasn't as diffused to campus. But one of the things that, as I've seen this going, I was part of that transportation search there were a lot of discussions then. The bikes, just to cut to the chase because we're getting late, the bike seems like a great idea. One of the things you could do is, well, go back a step. It makes sense to survey all of the people that have been added on. Maybe you're doing this, but you put out the transportation survey. See what in the way of, why is it the faculty members feel they have to drive? Most employees feel they have to drive. And I can tell you a whole bunch of reasons we don't need to go into now. They do need to drive. They're displaced. A lot of people are displaced by the fact that one road gets cut off that there was a natural road for coming, like, for example, the BB Lake Road. You know, that's made a big difference in North Campus, right? Because people have to go around and come down through there. So you can't really plan North Campus until the BB Lake Road is done. But then you get a sense of who's going where. But let's go back to the number of people that are coming in and why they're coming in and why we can't go back to more and more walking or more and more biking for everybody. I think with biking, if now that you're developing exterior parking lots like the East Hill parking lot, which is a great development, terrific development, I think, to have people be able to get there because it's close by and you can get on a bus. Buses don't come often enough, and buses are too darn big. Why not have small buses? Why not have small commuter buses that go back and forth all the time? I mean, I have bikes there, so faculty members can come, put their stuff in a bike, go off, come back. Have a big, long bike rest, not one where all the bikes disappear at 9:05 or something like that. But all these things to me seem to me to be useful to factor in. The survey of why it is that people are coming to your cars. One of the things that when you closed off the campus, one of the things that it did was, it didn't have student cars coming through. You never did. You never kept student cars at the point. Do we know how many student cars come through now? Back when Red Bud Web Woods was going through, we were quite exercised about what are we going to cost student cars. Do we know whether, in fact, the number of student cars has increased or not? Okay. And then that would be useful thing to find out. We also didn't have commuter cars for other reasons coming through. Do we know how many commuter cars for other reasons come through? We do. I don't know whether we do.
But it will be part of the count that we do, trying to understand.
Yeah. Okay. Those are just a few thoughts that I had on it, because I think it's great to adjust, and we need to adjust. And it seems to be like one good way of adjusting would be to know what the problem is and why it is that it can't go back to the 21st century equivalent of what going on in 1970.
Right. Yeah, that's a pretty complex question.
Sorry.
Just thinking about where people live with relation to where
yep.
they work.
Yep.
The fact that students bring vehicles.
Right.
Clearly a lot more than they used to. In some areas it'll be interesting as kind of a pilot project to see what College Town becomes, because they've essentially repealed most of the parking regulations for development, and everything's going to get much taller and parking is going away. So it'll be a drive list, if you will, community, as far as where you can park a vehicle. In the end, there'll be the driving garage, and that'll be it. So that'll make it very interesting to see if it changes behaviors or if people find parking somewhere else further out, right? And then come in. But, downtown may start to look similar to that.
I think the East Hill lot was a really interesting thing, and it was useful.
Mm-hmm.
I think having it there, they provided a lot of people who didn't have that opportunity before to come park there and take a bus and go in.
Right.
Maybe replicating something like that with
satellite bus.
With constant flow of commuting in buses or bikes or whatever.
Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Next up is Mr. Mezzi. Just a note, as we are coming up on time, keep your comments condensed so that everyone has a chance to speak.
Okay, I'll be short. I've got three questions. So the first, the mid-block standard,
yep.
is that something that you've adopted?
True. It is on our facilities engineering website as part of our facility standards for contracts.
So plan to update current mid-block crossings. What is the plan to bring them to the standard?
There is not a comprehensive plan to roll them out per se.
So just new
integrated into projects.
Okay, so as we get a chance to do them, they'll be done.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's no
that answers that question. The other question, Pilar and I were just talking about international students coming to campus who may have a different experience with the vehicle than we would expect here in Ithaca, New York. Anything, is there, I guess, is there any research, information out there, Bridget, things that your colleagues are sharing across campuses in this community regarding signage or communication or programs on ways to educate new to the state's drivers?
So, you know, we're talking about some of the education and the behavioral components. And so we do a lot of fairs and whatnot too, and even just to address, you know, the international students. But and we'll be very brief about this. But we actually missed the thing because we didn't talk about the wayfinder.
I can't believe I didn't put that in there. I'm sorry. That was supposed to be a slide in the presentation that we're about three quarters of the way through a wayfinding plan for campus. So looking at the biggest picture, how people pre-plan a visit to campus, what kind of digital tools are out there to help them find their way to campus, vehicular access through our many, many gateways to campus. You can get in no fewer than 8 formal and probably 15 if you go through communities, other access points. So without having that main entry, you know, how you deal with that. And then looking at, for vehicles, creating kind of a loop system on campus to get people directly to information booths, to talk to humans, to help them find their way, as well as to work through permitting and parking issues to make the parking issue that is very confusing and complicated for the newcomer and the uninitiated to find where is allowable parking, how can I get there. So we're working through some initiatives to even help people before they ever leave the home. Once you get there, the wayfinding plan starts to look at, you know, how we announce these gateways. You've arrived at Cornell, you can deposit your vehicle here, here are ways to get around. So really a family of signs that is pedestrian based at the pedestrian level is accessible to all users and can let people know. It's kind of breaking campus down into districts so that you can think about it in different levels. So North Campus, West Campus are already well known areas, but Central Campus, what does that look like? What does it include? Highlighting primary destinations and leaving sort of the breadcrumb trail to get people at the pedestrian level around. And it would be linked to also bicycle signage and routes, as well as potentially interpretive or historic signage. So something we're evaluating. We recognize that wayfinding to and on campus is inadequate. Yes, so agreed.
Thank you, Mr. Cisoka.
Kind of, so my two questions, one's related to the wayfinding thing is, it's great that you have the wayfinding, but I'm wondering what kind of communications plan you have built in your transportation, like overall infrastructure plan. I know when the TCAT changes happened, that was one of the big things that staff members realized, is that they would perceive the change very differently if there was a communications plan in place. So is there something like that as part of your infrastructure plan? And then my other question is in regards to planning with the other departments in the area, what kinds of relationships do you have there? I know you mentioned the East Hill, South Hill, Recway. Are there other formal relationships that you have? Because as you mentioned, transportation is a system. It's not just here at Cornell.
Right. So the first one is, since I've come on board, we have a director for outreach now. We didn't have that to begin with. And so he is working very diligently with TCAT and other providers to make sure that the word gets out. It's Gary from right. So he's new to the position, and he's helping TCAT communicate with the Cornell community quite a bit. So any changes that can help you guys know about it, you know, far in advance, and he's prolific. So you guys know Gary. Relationships otherwise, Leslie and I both sit on several committees with community members to talk about just transportation.
Right.
So we could go, we spend a lot of time, but we won't, just to let you know we have a lot of relationships with our regional partner.
Yep. So the town, the city are predominantly where, you know, campus is located, so working with both folks in those departments of planning and transportation. I was at the ICCTC planning meeting this morning, so Ithaca, Tompkins, Transportation Council, unless it's one initial there. But yes, all the municipalities are represented there and focused on federal, the DOT attends that meeting as well, but federal state funding opportunities, collaborative opportunities. I happen to used to work at the Tompkins County Planning Department for 5 years before this job, so I know a couple folks down there. But yeah, no, it's really important that we, particularly in times of lean financial positions for all, you know, municipalities as well as, you know, institutions, how we can collaborate and leverage all of our funds as well as great ideas and create those connective tissues. Particularly transportation is a great example of that kind of system, is where I think we'll have the best outcome for everybody.
Thank you. Mr. Waller?
I think my question was answered.
Okay, thank you. And that is, that exhausts the first speaker's list. Mr. McBride, you have a question. Okay, and that being said, that exhausts our speaker's list. Thank you very much for coming. If there's anything the Assembly can do to assist you or advocate for you, please feel free to let us know. Our Infrastructure Committee is always happy to hear from you. I ask the members to join me in thanking you for attending. Mr. Johnson.
I'd like to motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes so we can complete the business of the day.
Is there any dissent? Hearing none, we will extend the meeting to 6:05. Thank you very much for coming. Moving back into the regular agenda, liaison updates, Council on Sexual Violence Parade, Council on Sexual Violence and Prevention. Ms. Hurdleman is not here. She has not sent an update. Moving on, Policy Advisory Group, Mr. Kaufman.
Yeah, so the Policy Advisory Group is meets once a month. It hasn't met since the last time I updated, but the next meeting is going to be December 14th. So that's in about another month. They meet once each month, not, you know, every 4 weeks. We don't exactly, the EPRG hasn't sent us, you know, what we're going to be updating, but I'll probably get that before the next meeting. So I'll let you guys know what policy we'll be reviewing as soon as I know. For feedback. So.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Kaufman? Hearing none, Student Healthy Advisory Committee Liaison. Mr. Thompson.
Yeah, so we had our first meeting this morning from 9 to 11, and we reviewed the charge. And as you saw recently, news came out that the undergraduate financial aid office at least has factored the new health fee into the cost of attendance, so that can now be covered by financial aid, and that was in response to student concerns. Out of this meeting, we learned that Gannett is recommending that the health fee remain at $350 for the 2016-2017 school year, and the rationale behind that is that we want to gather more data on whether or not the health fee is effective at increasing the accessibility of Gannett to students at Cornell. And from preliminary data, they had about a month to show us there have been increased visits to Gannett, and more importantly than that, there's been an increase in diagnostics on Gannett. Previously, many students were declining diagnostics due to the copay prices of their private health insurance. So there has been a decline declined diagnostics. But that's very preliminary data, and they'll be presenting more comprehensive data in the spring.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Thompson? Hearing none, Mr. Inman is unfortunately not present for the Student Insurance Advisory Committee. He has not sent an update or anything else. We have a business of the day. We've already heard from the Cornell Bicycle Pedestrian Committee for discussion or tabling, UA Resolution 3, adoption of an inclusive restroom, locker room, and gender-specific facility usage policy. Mr. Thompson.
Per Robert's Rules of Order, we have to bring this up at this meeting again so we can retable it for the next meeting so that it doesn't die.
Second. Any dissent? Hearing none, we'll do so by unanimous consent. The motion is tabled. Moving on to the last item of business, discussion on median grade reporting on student transcripts.
Mr. Thompson. Motion to take that off the agenda.
Okay, there's a motion to remove that from the agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's done. Hearing none, that is removed from our agenda. That concludes our agenda. For Resolution 3, I will briefly add that I have circulated a copy of the resolution with members of the senior administration, University Architect, University Council, as well as other relevant parties. They have all stated that they have run it over. No one had comments to bring before the assembly, either in support or against, and they look forward to hearing from us. That concludes our agenda. Unless anyone has anything else to add, hearing done, it is 5:56, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.